You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. It is time to get up with tumult in Titletown. Aaron, absent, his teammates taking sides. Where do the Packers go from here? Then, the equal opposite reaction. Terrific for Tom in Tampa. Can anything stop the Bucs from going back to back? And then, it is the biggest question in college football. And it's finally on the verge of being answered. Heather and Paul have it all as we get up with you in this hour starting right now. Greeny and Graziano with you live at the Seaport, and delighted you've chosen to get up with us on this very busy day. Plenty of football. Mike Tannenbaum and Booger McFarland will join us shortly, but we begin with the night in the NBA and the thriller of the night in Salt Lake City. Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz take it on the Clippers. Game one. Going to pick it up in the fourth. Good game. Jazz up five, and Donovan Mitchell was spectacular. Watch him here, working through traffic. 1-2-3 defenders can't stop him. Jazz up seven. Mitchell finished with 45. Final minute. Clippers down six, but not giving up. Kawhi kicking. Luke Kennard. That's a tough angle. No good. But eventually, Paul George has got it. He had a long night. Just 4 of 17, but those are a big three. Clippers within three. Ensuing Jazz possession. 23 seconds to go. Mitchell looking for some distance. Can't get it to fall. Clippers come back the other way. Will they call a timeout? No, they won't. Here we go. Here's your ball game. Down by three. They need three to tie. Final 10 seconds. Look at the defense from Utah. Stifling. Kawhi, nowhere to go. Into the corner. Nowhere to go. Rudy Gobert with the block. And that's how it would end. Time expires before it gets off of Marcus Morris. How about Gobert? The former defensive player of the year. Showing you why. The spectacular stop at the finish. Again, Mitchell with 45, and Utah holds on to take game one, 112-109. That was the game of the night. The performance of the night belonged to the big fella from Philly, Joel Embiid, starting again after the big night in game one, and they needed him after the loss. Meanwhile, Trae Young, they're looking to slow him down, and they would. Watch Young, no good. Danny Green the rebound. Tobias Harris on the other end. Sixer fans love it as Philly jumped out to a fast start. Later in the first, Sixers up 16. Watch this pass. Oh, Ben Simmons right down the lane. Hawks down 18. Sixers would hold Trae Young to just 21. Embiid getting it going meanwhile in the second quarter. Sixers, the lead is only two. Embiid working on Clint Capela. Look at the strength. The four-point lead. 4 minutes left in the half. Embiid will fall away. Embiid 11 in the second quarter. Sixers up two at the break. Third quarter. Sixers up by four. Time expiring. And there was a moment in time when the best player on the floor was Shake Milton. Look at Milton. He had 14 points in 14 minutes. Drills that one at the end of the third. Sixers up by seven. Fourth quarter. The lead is now 17. Embiid still in the game. That gives him 40 for the night, plus 13 rebounds. Sixers win it 118-102. They even up the series at one game apiece. And after scoring the 39 in game one, Embiid adding 40 in game two, the 79 so far in this series, second most in the first two games of a playoff series in Sixers history. And here is Jay Will, the J of KJZ on ESPN Radio. Mm-hmm. So a best of five now. Sixers, Hawks. Embiid has been good. Hawks took home court advantage away. Who has the advantage in this series right now?
I still think the Hawks do. Look, the Hawks are so talented offensively, and as great as the defensive performance I saw last night, I feel like the Hawks know they can win this series. Now, Trae Young was limited last night. Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle did a hell of a job staying on him defensively, funneling him into help. But if you're the Hawks, you're going back home saying, we did exactly what we came here to do in Philly. We stole one. Now we come back. We defend home court. Trae Young obviously needs to be prolific. But we can also see Trae Young transform into a superstar. He's a star. But playoffs make you a superstar. If he can continue to elevate at home, this team is dangerous.
Can we say the same thing, however, about Joel Embiid, who's had two huge games here to start this? Now, he was already a higher level of star, but he hasn't taken his team deep into the playoffs. Is he the guy who can make that run this season for Philadelphia?
I think he can. I think somebody showed him the cell phone last night where he got one MVP vote in first place. So, look, Joel Embiid is a special talent. The question is, can he stay on the floor? Can he stay healthy? And can Ben Simmons Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle, Seth Curry, can they surround him with enough scoring? But they have to do it on a defensive end, Greeny. That's what makes him special.
So I never like to skip this far ahead, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
Which of these two teams would give the Brooklyn Nets a tougher go in the conference final, assuming that's the way it goes, and it certainly feels headed that way?
76ers. There's no doubt about it.
Because
the lack of inside presence, even though Brooklyn would want to play fast, you would try to see Philadelphia do not what Milwaukee's doing, slow down the pace, allow Joel Embiid to establish down low, and then the likes of Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, Maxey, some of the defenders they have will be incredible matchups. Ben Simmons going against Kevin Durant, that's a matchup you would like to see. Same with Matisse Thybulle going on James Harden or Kyrie Irving, or James Harden is not playing, Matisse Thybulle on Kyrie Irving. I'm not saying he will get the best of Kyrie Irving, but the size and the length will be something to deter KI.
All right, so that's the story in the East. Out West, we've got Phoenix, they have the legendary Chris Paul. We have Denver, they have the league MVP. We've got the Clippers, and they have Kawhi Leonard, mm-hmm. who's been a finals MVP. Is Donovan Mitchell, whose Jazz take the 1-0 lead last night, as we just showed you, is he good enough to be the best player on a championship team?
Yes, he is. He had 45 points last night. And I go back to that awkward moment he had with Shaquille O'Neal, where people have questioned, are you a superstar? I know what you can do in a regular season, but can you do it in the playoffs? Last night proved to me that he is the best player on the best team, right? Due to the fact that they surround him with right pieces the way they play. And plus, man, look, the West is wide open, Greeny. It's wide open. If he can do this against Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, he can do this against anybody in an NBA.
Jazz take that 1-0 lead. And again, he is right now the best player on the best team in the league. He is Jay Williams, KJZ, every weekday morning, coast to coast on ESPN Radio. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Our next stop is the NFL and our usual visit to Green Bay Packers camp, where Aaron Rodgers is absent as they opened yesterday. It's the first time in Rodgers' career that he has skipped the mandatory minicamp. Here are his head coach and his number one receiver, who seem to be viewing the situation somewhat differently.
Anytime you're talking about any player on your football team, you'd love everybody to be here. And so, you know, it's certainly... it is what it is, man. I think, you know, I'm naturally optimistic, but, you know, again, we'll take it day by day and just do whatever we can to help remedy this situation.
If there's ever a wonder of, you know, he's lost a teammate or something because of all this come out, like, he knows where I stand. I'll stand on the mountain and scream on the mountaintop, you know, that I got his back. And, you know, it's not like I'm saying forget the front office. Like, you know, I don't respect what they have going on. I'm just saying I back my guy up.
Okay, so isn't that interesting? And David Bakhtiari also yesterday publicly having the back of his legendary quarterback. And we've got Booger and Mike T and Dan Graziano here. And Booger, I just want to start with you, understanding the dynamics of all of this. When you hear the players, particularly Devontae Adams, coming out that strongly backing Aaron Rodgers, what does that mean to you?
Well, if I'm Aaron Rodgers and I'm hearing that, Green, I feel really good, because as a player, when I'm on the field, I know those guys out there, the other 10 guys on the field, have my back. And I think from a player's point of view, Greeny, you got to have the guys back to step on the field with you. I get it, the coach, the front office, all that other stuff. But when you step on the field with those players, those are the guys that are in the huddle. Those other people, the coach, the GM, they never step foot on the field. So I would expect nothing less. And I'm quite frankly, I am glad that Bakhtiari and Devontae Adams, they have Aaron Rodgers back, because they should. There's a brotherhood amongst the players when we step on the field. And I think they understand the dynamic of what's going on. They're not oblivious to things that have happened in Green Bay. They may not comment on them, but they know how Aaron Rodgers felt when Aaron Rodgers saw Jordan Love getting drafted. As a player, you feel a certain way. We all know what that meant. At some point, you're drafting a guy to replace me, and I think everyone recognized that, and I think everyone understands how Aaron feels. And so I'm glad that they came out and said what they said, because if I was them, I'd say the same thing.
So, Mike T, if you're the general manager or the president there in Green Bay, how does that impact you? The fact that the players are not only privately, last week all the receivers didn't show up for the voluntary stuff, now the biggest stars on the team besides Rodgers are publicly supporting him. How, if at all, does it impact the way this thing goes?
You have to remain patient. And if Aaron Rodgers loves football, despite hating the front office of the Green Bay Packers, they have to prove to him that if you want to play football this season, it's as a Green Bay Packer. And to do that, that's not going to happen overnight. It's probably going to happen sometime after Labor Day. So I agree with Booger. from a front office standpoint, you love the fact that his teammates have his back, but your job is to prove to him that as a competitor, as someone that loves the game, your only option on the table is to play football right here in Green Bay, despite the differences you have with us.
So, Graziano, you're as plugged into the situation there as any reporter that we have. And we hear the coach up there saying, literally, it is what it is, man. I mean, that's where he finds himself. Where do they find themselves right now?
They're trying to do what Mike is talking about and stay patient, right? Like, they're dug in as well, and they're not interested in trading him. They still want to find a solution in which Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback in 2021. So I think it's – I don't want to reduce it to oversimplistic, but it's kind of a game of chicken, right? Like, how far is he willing to take it? He's now skipping mandatory minicamp. Is he going to skip training camp? Is he going to sit out regular season games? At this point, the Packers' position is they're willing to wait and find that out and go about their business in the meantime. Obviously, they could get impatient. They could decide, you know, to be rid of the situation and trade him, and that may be what Aaron Rodgers is hoping for. But right now, both sides are dug in.
Mike T, let me come back to you because you're one who has lived these. Again, for those who don't know, Mike was a general manager in two different places in the NFL. At the same time this is happening, is the phone in the Packers front office ringing every single day with GMs from other teams checking in and saying things like, hey, have you changed your mind? Is he available? I'll offer you this, that, and the other. Is that happening every single day?
100%. And I've been on both ends of those phone calls. Once when we were trying to pursue Brett Favre, I was at a lake house up in northern Vermont with my family. And the worst thing that could happen, Greeny, is to read that Brett Favre is a Buffalo Bill or at the time a Miami Dolphin. Likewise, when we were going through a Darrell Revis holdout, we were getting calls all the time like, hey, what is it going to take? We're interested. So from a competitive standpoint, you don't want to lose out on an opportunity truly of a lifetime. So if you're the Denver Broncos, could you imagine waking up one day and seeing that he's a Las Vegas Raider? So absolutely, the phone's ringing a lot. And candidly, that adds a layer of angst to the Green Bay Packers because now they're dealing with all that incoming as well. So it just makes a difficult situation even harder.
All right, so Booger, again, let me circle it all the way back to you on the mentality of all of this. At the end of the day, Dan Graziano, I think, just framed this correctly. This is a game of chicken. How do you see Aaron Rodgers playing this? If the Packers are going to force him into a situation where he's going to have to start missing things more important than mandatory minicamps in June, how do you see it playing out?
Well, first of all, Greeny, I'm going to give you this answer from Tampa, Florida, not from my lake house in the mountain, wherever Mike T was. Mike T, nice humble brag this morning. We all don't have a lake house, but good for you. Glad that you have a lake house. Greeny, at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers has 240 million reasons that he doesn't have to blink. So if this is a game of chicken, I'm going to bet on the guy that doesn't have to move. I get it. The organization has more money, but Aaron Rodgers has something that I think that a lot of people aren't banking on, and he has a resolve that, you know what? You've done me wrong based on whatever merits that he deemed that they've done him wrong on. And we all know they didn't believe in him based on the fact that they moved up. They traded up to draft Jordan Love. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is coming in. And so in my mind, this is not a game of chicken. This is really a move based on the Green Bay Packers. It's your move. You trade me, great. If you don't, I'm going to chill. I'm going to be in Hawaii. I'm going to take my shirt off. I'm going to hike up mountains, and nobody's going to bother me because if you find me $100,000, you find me $500,000, you know what? I'll go in my sock drawer. I'll find that, and I'll send it to you because I have a resolve because it's based on principles. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to go to Mike T's lake house somewhere in the mountains, and I'm going to just hang out. So y'all call me when y'all ready to trade me.
So Aaron Rodgers will be at the lake house. Mike Tannenbaum will be in Vermont. Graziano is with me. And Booger, I think, is at the scene of a lunar eclipse, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
He just, I don't know what's going on in the house there, Booger. We got to get some lights on. One way or the other, we're just getting rolling this morning. Coming up, it is full speed ahead for Tom Brady as he hits the practice field following knee surgery. Who is the biggest threat to Brady and the Bucs in the NFC? That's the question. We'll have the answer. Plus, Dak back, which is huge for Dallas. But we'll tell you why he may not be the most important piece to the puzzle this year. That's on the way. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Get Up is brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Only pay for what you need. Here's what I need. I need Dan Graziano to run the hurry up through a bunch of NFL stories right now. Chandler Jones is where it starts.
Yeah, this is one to watch, Greeny. Chandler Jones not at the Cardinals mandatory minicamp. 1 year left on his contract at a non-guaranteed $15.5 million. Chandler Jones feels like he's been more productive than that. Where this is headed is going to be interesting. Does he get a new deal from Arizona? And if not, do they put him on the trade block at some point this summer? Right now, that's not what they want to do, but we will continue to keep an eye on it. We're also keeping an eye on Giants running back Saquon Barkley, who is at the team's mandatory minicamp, but isn't doing a whole lot, rehabbing from the injury that cost him 14 games last year. The Giants are going to take it real slow with Saquon Barkley this summer. It's entirely possible, even likely, that he does not have a full workload come the start of training camp. People I've talked to there say the Giants want to do right by Saquon Barkley and his body and his healing process, not just rush him back, so they say he was ready in time for training camp. And down in Tampa, Tom Brady went through a practice yesterday at the mandatory mini camp. Did a little more than I think the Buccaneers expected him to. Bruce Arians said he held him out only of the blitz periods. Didn't want all that action around his legs while things were going on. But Brady looks like he's good to go and will be ready to go full strength in time for training camp coming off of the procedure that he had done this offseason as well. So positive news on the health front for Tom Brady, who doesn't seem to age or have any kind of physical.
Of the news coming out of Buccaneers camp seems to be positive right now. Their coach, Bruce Arians, spent a moment with our Sal Palantonio yesterday talking about where Brady is health-wise right now. Listen to this.
Where he's about 90%. I was really pleased with what he did today. I was a little scared. I took him out of the blitz drill. I didn't want anybody running around his feet, but he wanted to get in there, and that's 90% of the battle.
Because really, Bruce, I mean, the whole thing is you got to make sure that this guy stays healthy for training camp, is ready for September 12th, right? And then you got a 17-game season. So how much of this is managing a guy who's going to be 44 years old this year?
Yeah, he learned a lot of that last year, how I handle that. You know, there'll be a Wednesday that he'll take off here and there. Just, hey, this is about the time, you know, this month we're going to take this Wednesday off. Where's your arm? Training camp, the same thing. We're not going every day. And it's the way I manage all the vets. You know, we've got some very, very young players, and we've got some guys that don't need to practice every day.
So that was yesterday. Whack again here with Booger McFarland. And Booger, let me ask you again. You make your home down there in Tampa, so you're sort of close to all of this. What reason is there to believe, with everybody back and Brady healthier now, it appears, than before, and all of that, that the Buccaneers aren't going to be better than they were a year ago? Is there any reason to believe that?
You know, other than health, there really is no reason. It's amazing. If you look at where they were a year ago, practicing on a high school football field, no one really knew whether this was going to work or not. From a playbook standpoint, Tom Brady hadn't even put all the offense in, and they still went out and won the Super Bowl in a COVID year under those circumstances. Now they get a full offseason together somewhat. Greeny, they're going to be better. They'll be more familiar with each other now. Whether they'll win or not, we don't know, because the ball is not shaped squarely and it's not going to bounce a certain way. It's an oblong ball and it bounces funny. So we all know that. But health is the one thing that could derail this team. Other than that, they will be a markedly better team than they were last year.
I think that makes all the sense in the world. And they didn't have the best record in the NFC, but at the end, they were the best team. So it begs this question. Who's the biggest threat to Tampa in the NFC? Booger, I will start with you. Which team is the biggest danger to Tom Brady's Buccaneers?
Well, Green, I think there are a lot of teams out there that you could throw in the mix. But if Aaron Rodgers goes back to Green Bay somehow, some way, which I do not think that's going to happen, but if some miracle came down on earth and Aaron Rodgers is back in Green Bay, it's got to be the Green Bay Packers. He's the best quarterback other than Tom Brady in the NFC. They have continuity. The defense has got to be a little bit better, especially on the back end. You got the Smith brothers up front, Za'Darius and Preston. So overall, defensively, they'll be better. And we all know that the Buccaneers defense helped them win the Super Bowl, and the quarterback's going to have to make some timely throws. And I do think Aaron Rodgers can do that, but he's not going to be back in Green Bay. So sorry, Green Bay fans. Hate to give you hope this morning.
Well, that's fair. I mean, I think most of us think, or at least believe, that's a possibility. So, Graziano, let me sort of change the question a little bit, sort of midstream. If Rodgers isn't on the Packers, which team is the biggest threat to Tampa?
First team I thought of was the L.A. Rams, because they believe they've upgraded at quarterback with Matthew Stafford. And, you know, the Rams had the worst QBR for a team of any team with a winning record last year, 21st overall and the worst among teams with winning records. So if they get better quarterback play, which they, again, they anticipate they will with Matthew Stafford, they could elevate from just a playoff team into a strong Super Bowl contender.
Mike Tannenbaum, same question. If Aaron Rodgers isn't playing for the Packers, who's the biggest threat to Tampa, Tom?
This is easy. The San Francisco 49ers, they missed 68 games last year in terms of stars who missed time, which was 40% of their cap. If Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy, Nick Bosa is a top five player in the league. Raheem Mostert, Debo Samuel, this team is loaded. If they're healthy, look out. George Kittle, we're looking at here, missed a lot of time last year. And by the way, we're not even talking about Trey Lance, who may be the best quarterback on their roster. So this team is loaded. They have great depth. They just need to stay healthy.
Well, that is what I was going to ask you, because all the video we showed there was Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you expect him to be the quarterback when they make that run at the end of the season?
Greeny, I do, because I think he'll play well, and it's a win-win. He'll graduate at the end of the year and get a massive payday as a free agent next year, and the 49ers will move on to Trey Lance.
All right, and I think we're all overlooking the most obvious team. I'm pounding the table for the Washington football team. This will not cease. They are outstanding on defense. They are sneaky good at weapons, and Ryan Fitzpatrick has been much better the last 3 years than anyone has paid attention to. He is a much better quarterback than they had last year. They had the worst quarterback play in the entire NFL last year via the QBR. If they just get somewhere in the middle, and there he is yesterday on his first day of school, the young man from Harvard, then in my opinion, the Washington football team will become a team to beat. Remember where you heard that first. Okay, we continue in just a moment. As we go, why this slumping superstar might just be the key to the entire NFL season. Can Zeke bounce back? What happens if he doesn't? We'll answer those questions. Plus, Nick Saban, 7 rings, looking for 8. Why getting that one could soon get a whole lot harder. Heather and Paul are here with huge news from college football. Don't miss it. Get up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We're back on Get Up, and the Cowboys' mandatory minicamp is underway. There's a great deal of uncertainty around this team, but not at quarterback. Dak Prescott back from a compound fracture and dislocation of his right ankle. He's got the big contract, and he appears ready to go. Defense is where most of the questions are. They allowed 34 passing touchdowns, over 2,500 rushing yards last year, both among the worst in franchise history. And then there's Ezekiel Elliott, who had career lows in rushing yards and yards per rush. He's entering his age 26 season in 2021. Here's Mike McCarthy on the star running back.
I think Zeke looks great. I mean, he's been here pretty much the whole time. He goes to the early morning quarterback meetings. So he's, you know, he's a pro's pro. I've been impressed with Zeke since day one. You know, he sits in the front row, asks good questions, So he knows the offense in and out. I mean, he does everything you look for in a veteran. So he's had an outstanding offseason program.
So, Booger, if I were to make the following statement, that it's wonderful that Dak got all the money that he got, but I do not think the Cowboys or the quarterback should become of the opinion that just because he's getting paid that way, they need to become this high-flying passing team. Last year when he was throwing for 1 million yards, they were still losing those games. When the Cowboys have won in recent years, it's because they have run their offense through Ezekiel Elliott. Should it still be that way going forward?
Well, Greeny, I don't think the game of football is going to go backwards. And I don't think really any team other than maybe the Cleveland Browns or the Rams or 49ers are running their offense through the running game. You're going to have to be able to make explosive plays in the passing game. The Cowboys' biggest issue is not running the football. They score a ton of points. Like, from an offensive standpoint, you hear CeeDee Lamb talking about we're going to be unstoppable. And if I were him, I'd feel the same way. Like, they put up 30 or 40 points a game. Their biggest issue is they're going to have to figure out a way on the other side of the ball to play defense. I don't think any longer can you say, okay, we're going to have the best offensive line in football, and we're going to hand the football to Zeke 25, 30 times a game. Like, those days are gone. The toothpaste is out of the tube. We're not putting it back in. Now, Ezekiel Elliott can really be a complimentary piece, and I know it sounds crazy for a guy that has a $90 million contract, but you cannot run an explosive offense and score enough points by only running the football, Greeny.
Understood. And I didn't mean to suggest only running the football, but one of the ways you make your terrible defense a little bit better is by leaving them on the sideline a little bit more, Boog, right? And if you are running the football and controlling time of possession and clock and all those sorts of things, it helps that as well.
I would agree with you, Greeny, but this is pro football. You cannot hide an entire defensive unit of 11 guys on the other side of the. You're going to have to, at some point, play better defense. So, sure, you can run the football and limit the snaps. Usually, a defense plays about 65 to 70 snaps a game. If you're the Cowboys, you maybe want to limit that to 55 to 60 snaps a game. That way you can limit the amount of time that your defense has to make a stop. But in the end, this is pro football, okay? You're paid to stop people on the other side of the ball. So I hear you. We can run the football. We can play ball control, yada, yada, yada. But at some point, the Cowboys brought in a new defensive coordinator in Dan Quinn. And from everything I hear, it's going to be a multiple defense, 3-4, 4-3. But Greeny, some of the same players are still there. So I'm really curious to see how a new coordinator with the same ingredients, quote unquote, a new chef with the same ingredients, can he cook a new meal? I'm very skeptical of that, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt until I see it.
Well, Graziano, let's pick up the thought there, because for all the superstar names that we have in Dallas, maybe that guy we just saw, Dan Quinn, is the most important person of their season.
And part of the reason the Cowboys hired him was because he runs that Seattle-style defense that they used to run prior to last year. They had Chris Richard there, and they were kind of built around that. So the Cowboys felt like bringing in Dan Quinn, not only do they feel like he's a good coach who can help unlock these guys, but he also felt like the guys that were there prior to 2020 would understand what he's talking about and kind of snap back into those kinds of schemes and that kind of terminology more easily. So they feel like that's happened. They've made some changes in the secondary that they hope will make things better. Obviously, it can't be a lot worse than it was last year. But, yeah, you're right, Greeny. I mean, Dan Quinn, the new defensive coordinator, a huge part of what the Cowboys expect and hope will be improvement this year.
Go ahead, Booger.
But here's the deal. Everyone keeps talking about this Seattle-style defense. Have you seen the Seattle-style players that came with Dan Quinn? Please let me know who they are. Because we can talk about the Seattle style. I haven't seen Richard Sherman. I haven't seen those guys in the front four come over yet. And DeMarcus Lawrence has to revert back to the guy that we paid $100 million. And even if he does do that, who else is going to help him? Like, that's the thing about it. Dan Quinn is not going to step across that white line. He's going to make the same impact on the field that me and you made, Grass. And last time I checked, both you and I were riding a bicycle to get in shape. We can't play football anymore. So what the hell is Dan Quinn going to do besides call some plays?
But the difference in the two of you is that at least at one point you could.
He used to be.
Let me get Tannenbaum in here. Make some sense of all this, Mike T, because what you're talking I like the analogy that Booger used here. You brought in a new chef, but you have most of the same ingredients. Just how different can the meal be?
Yeah, and that's where I see it differently. There are some new ingredients. Keanu Neal came over. They drafted Micah Parsons in the first round. Kelvin Joseph, a really talented corner in the second round, should start. They drafted three more defensive players in the third round. And as Hembo reminded me, ironically, guys, in 2015 when Dan Quinn became the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, that defense got a lot better. Who was the defensive coordinator the year before? None other than Mike Nolan. So I expect a massive improvement defensively, in part because of Dan Quinn's genius, but also, Booger, I do think they add some parts that resemble some of that Seattle defense. So if they're middle of the road, this is a team that could go far in the playoffs.
All right, hold that thought there, guys. I got the basketball guys standing by, so let me run to that. We will come back to this, pardon me, in just a few minutes. But right now I want to run the floor here because there's a bunch of NBA news. It started before the action last night. Nikola Jokic becoming the first center to win the NBA's MVP award since Shaquille O'Neal in 2000. What a season he had. More than 26 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists a game. Joel Embiid finished second in the voting, but congratulations to Nikola Jokic. Then, the games last night, we opened with these full highlights. Rudy Gobert blocking a potential game-tying three by Marcus Morris in the final seconds as the Jazz beat the Clippers to take Game 1, 112-109. At home, they were led by Donovan Mitchell, who had 45 points. Game 2 will be tomorrow here on ESPN. The early game yesterday, Joel Embiid spectacular. Again, he had 40 points after scoring 39 in Game 1. Sixers beat the Hawks. That series now tied at one game apiece. Game 3 is Friday night, and let's talk hoops with PJ and Perk, the big fella and the slightly less big fella. Good morning, guys. Kendrick Perkins, let me start with you. 79 points for Joel Embiid in these first two games when we weren't even sure he was going to be healthy enough to play. How would you put into words what we've seen from that man in the first two games of this series?
A beautiful thing to see, Greeny. Look, and he's doing it on one leg. He is dominating the Atlanta Hawks. He dominated last night. This man cannot be stopped. I'm sitting up here watching. I'm saying to myself, okay, they're going to double team him. He still finds ways to get to the basket. Okay, I'm saying, okay, he's not going to make this face up. He's shooting over double teams. He's getting to the free throw line. He's doing it all. He's running out in transition. The big fella is in his bag. He bought a carry-on, and he threw some luggage under the plane, Greeny. Right now, he's he looks in phenomenal shape, and he's putting his 76ers team on his back. And by the way, he's carrying Ben Simmons.
Okay, and there you have that. So Embiid spectacular. In the meantime, though, PJ, do a little coaching for us here. Let's teach the audience a little basketball here, okay? The Knicks had no answers for Trae Young through five games of that series, and the Sixers didn't in game one of this series. Last night was a totally different story. What did they do?
Well, I think they did a couple things. First of all, they got more length on him. They have some really good length to throw at him with Ben Simmons, with Matisse Thybulle, with Tobias Harris. If you'll notice, he shot 1-for-7 from three because he had these big guys out contesting. They even got a piece of that one right there. So I think at times that length bothered him. And again, you can't just put big people. It's got to be big people that have a chance of staying in front of him like they were unable to do right there. But there's good help from the other people. Their focus was much better. He also missed some shots he's going to make normally. He was 1-for-7 for three. That's where it really made a difference. I just think their defensive focus was night and day. They dug such a hole, Greeny, in that first quarter of game one with all those turnovers. Look at the big guy, Perks guy, working out and playing him. I mean, Joel Embiid, whatever injury he's got, a lot of bigs in the league should get it because he's played unbelievable these first two games.
So, PJ, 1-1 now going back to Atlanta. The Hawks got home court advantage. Embiid has been spectacular. Who has the, as you watch this series right now, who do you like going forward in it? PJ.
I like Philadelphia. They have more experience. They've got Joel Embiid. As long as he stays healthy, he has to be healthy. Again, we talked about it. How about what Shake Milton did? Doc has a hunch. Shake was so good in the regular season. He comes in. This one's to close the quarter. Their bench was really impressive. After they came up with a donut in the first half, George Hill with a steal here, and he scores. And here is the insurance for Dwight. Right now, Dwight Howard is the insurance just in case Joel's got to miss a game or they got to limit his minutes. He played really well for the Lakers, and he is a tremendous insurance policy for Doc Rivers.
How about you, Big Perk? Who's going to win this series?
Oh, it's the Hawks. The Hawks in six. Look, when they get to Atlanta, when Philly touched down in Atlanta, They're going to see that Magic City is not the spot. It's the FedEx Center, right? It's the center down there in Atlanta. We call it Club ATL, okay? It's going to be rocking up in there. They're going to be selling lemon pepper Lou wings in there. Look, role players play better at home. And to go back to PJ's point, Shake Milton stepped up in the second half, and they got the crowd involved. But before then, before Shake Milton hit that three-point shot, the crowd was dead. Trae Young is going to bounce back. Role players are going to play better at home. I see the Hawks winning this in six games. They have confidence. They won game one. They had a chance. They were in the game in game two. And instead, they had that little spurt. So I have the Hawks in six.
Okay,
13 straight wins, Greeny. 13 wins in a row at home for Atlanta right now. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, they've been really good. Super quickly, I just want to ask you both this question. I have less than a minute. Big Perk, Donovan Mitchell right now is the best player on a Utah team that's been the best team in the sport all season. Is he good enough to be the best player on an NBA championship team right now? Big Perk.
Absolutely. Look, this is Dwayne Wade with a three-point jump shot. He has superstar written all over him. Greeny, he has showed us this time and time again. When it matters the most, he rises to the occasion. This Utah Jazz team has the pieces around them to win the championship, and they have a young superstar in Donovan Mitchell that could lead the way.
PJ, agree?
It's his turn. He's got to do it, though, Greeny. Yeah, no reason to think he won't, but he hasn't done it yet. You don't talk about it. You go out and do it. I think he's on the verge of doing it. I love that team.
Outstanding. Guys, thanks a million. Always great to see you. Thanks for getting up here. NBA action continues fast and furious. Meanwhile, coming up here, we continue fast and furious as well. Is Notre Dame's road to the college football playoff about to get a whole lot easier? Heather and Paul with huge news from college football. Don't miss it. Next.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back on Get Up with the debut of a new segment with Mike Tannenbaum called And Here's Why, because he tends to say those three words all the time. So, Mike Tannenbaum, I'm going to make a statement. You tell me if you agree. Jordan Love will be the week one starter for the Packers. Do you agree?
Yes, and here's why. He's going to beat out Blake Bortles. Aaron Rodgers is still going to be a Green Bay Packer, but he's not going to show up probably until week three or four. So opening day, Jordan Love, the very quarterback they traded up that started this whole mess, will be the opening day starter for the Green Bay Packers.
All right, fair enough. The next one takes us to Tennessee with Julio Jones now on the team. The Titans will be in the AFC Championship game. Do you agree?
Yes, and here's why. You have two frontline number one receivers, Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, a great running back we're seeing here in Derrick Henry, a top five quarterback we're seeing here in Ryan Tannehill. This will be a prolific offense. If the defense can be middle of the road, they're in the championship game against the Chiefs.
All right, and then one more. The Pittsburgh Steelers are the defending champions of the AFC North, so they will win that division again this year. Do you agree?
I disagree, and here's why. They're going to be last because they have the worst quarterback in that division. And Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield are getting better. Ben Roethlisberger is getting older with a new left tackle and a new center. they're going to be bad this year, and it's going to get worse next year.
All right, and for those of you who play the ever-popular drinking game, drink some coffee or whatever it is you drink at this time of day. Every time Mike Tannenbaum says, and here's why, you're welcome. That was the impetus for the feature. Stand by, Mike. We're coming back to you in a minute. But right now I want to flash back all the way to January 1st. That was the last time we saw the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame playing in the Rose Bowl in a loss to Alabama 31-14. After spending the one season in the ACC, Notre Dame is going back now to familiar ground. And here's our familiar Wednesday visit with Heather Dinich, who has more.
Notre Dame and the ACC have had a relationship for years, but things got a little more serious last fall when the Irish scrapped 132 years of tradition and joined the conference for a total of 10 games.
It's a foot race. He'll win. Touchdown, Fighting Irish.
The pandemic pushed them together, a temporary scheduling solution that was as historic as the season it was played in. It was also a bit of a tease. Even as a member of the ACC, Notre Dame wound up in a familiar spot, hoping its one-loss resume was strong enough to make the playoff without winning a conference title. Of course it was. It's Notre Dame. So here we are again, with the Irish sliding back into independence, living the single life, while keeping dates this fall with ACC opponents Florida State, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Virginia, and Georgia Tech. Regardless of whether or not they earn a semifinal spot, the Irish will still get a slice of the playoff pie, and this time, they don't have to share it.
The reasons that we value independence and it continues to be a priority for us aren't impacted by the positive experience of being in the ACC fully this year. It's just that it serves some other interests of Notre Dame as a university that are very important to us.
Fans love to hate Notre Dame. Notre Dame loves to be hated. That's a relationship that was built to last.
Always so much fun, and Heather and Paul join us here every Wednesday, and we were going to have a lengthier discussion about this, but Heather, your story of yesterday, I think, really sort of changed the thinking here. For those who didn't see it, and it could involve an easier path for Notre Dame and everybody else to get into the college football playoff. Again, for those who didn't see it, what is the latest?
Next week in Chicago, Thursday and Friday, the commissioners will have what I'm describing as the most important and significant discussions about the college football postseason since it went from 2 to 4. They will be presented models to consider for expansion. 12 has been a number that's been floating around for about a month now. They might come to that conclusion. They might not. No one I have spoken to who will be in that meeting knows what to expect as far as whether or not they will come to a consensus next week. But if they do, and there's a model they agree on, the following Monday and Tuesday in Dallas, they'll present that to the 11 university presidents and chancellors with the power to change the playoff. At that meeting in Dallas, they can give them the green light, go figure out how to do this and when you can do it. And then in September, this might start to become more of a reality. This is all of a sudden becoming very real when we're talking about playoff expansion, and it's quickly snowballing.
The possibility of significant change in college football. And again, Paul Feinbaum, if indeed there is a morning that you come on the show, at the morning after Heather Dinich reports, the college football playoff has officially expanded from 4 to 12 teams. Paul, what will you say?
Well, I'm still shocked, Greeny, when I heard the story the other day. I mean, you have to remember, the people that run college football are still using flip phones. They haven't heard about the iPhone 1 or 12 or 15. And the idea that these people who have been steadfastly defending the 4 as if there's no other possibilities suddenly go to 12 is one of the biggest shocks in the history of college sports. And I think they're going to do it. I think they're tired of fighting the status quo. They know what everyone is saying. They can't really give you a justification why they would go from 4 to 12, but they're going to do it because there's a lot of money at stake and it's time to change the narrative of college football.
Booger, as one who was a great college football player in your day and has covered the sport for us forever, what is your perspective? What would you say if they decide to go from 4 to 12?
Well, I think they were doing the wrong thing, Greeny. And, you know, for everyone who says we need to go from 4 to 8 to 12, I would just ask one question. Why? Is it about money? Is it about greed? Is it about the kids? Is it about your satisfaction? Because we all talk about, hey, playing for a national championship should be tough. We want to take it out of the computer's hands, take it away from the BCS. Well, we did that. We have a college football playoff where 12 to 13 members sit in the room, and you have the humans who vote on it, and they decide which four teams should be in the playoff. It should be hard. Why are we continually trying to make the college football playoff easier? It's not for the kids' satisfaction. It's not for the school's satisfaction. It's for the satisfaction of everyone else, including myself, who covered the sport. It should be hard. I've said it from the get-go, and I'll say it again. If they change it from 4 to 8 to anything other than 4, they're making a mistake and they're doing it for the wrong reasons. Money, greed, and self-satisfaction is no reason to change it. And at some point, if you're the governing body, the Power Five, the NCAA, whoever the hell is governing the sport these days, because I have no idea, ask yourself this. This is still an amateur sport, isn't it? Why are we continually trying to make this a professional sport by saying, let's go to a 12-team playoff, a 16 playoff? Like, miss me with all that, Greeny. It's 4. It should remain 4. I like it. Everybody is ticked off every year because somebody got left out. And you know what that creates? That creates intrigue about the sport. That creates a lot of emotion. And that's what college football is about. So I truly hope they never change it.
Paul, why'd you shake your head when he said it's an amateur sport?
Because it's not, Greeny. I mean, we have a hearing going on in Congress today that's going to give young people the right to make money off their likeness. Let's quit using that word, Booger. I agree with almost everything you said, but the problem with college football, they don't have any leadership. So what are they going to do? They're looking around going, who is doing this right? Where are all the eyeballs? Where's all the money? It's the NFL. That college football right now cannot compete with the NFL, even though they probably shouldn't be trying, but their numbers are inferior. So what they're going to do is just break the bank. They're going to open this thing up, and suddenly we're going to be talking about wild card games and home field advantage in college. College football playoff, just like we do with the NFL.
All right, I'm up against the end of an hour. I really want to get Heather back in on this. Guys, stay with me somewhere, somehow. We're getting you back in this conversation, but I got the end of an hour, so it's going to go to a break whether we're ready or not. Coming up, he's not bluffing. What happens now after Aaron Rodgers skips mandatory minicamp? That's the question. We'll go live to Green Bay for the answer, and look who'll join the conversation. Oh, Dan Orlovsky is ready to go. He'll be a part of the party. Next.